Hey everybody, welcome to Chat Talk. My name's MD. Today we have Nikolai in from the Park Circle Film Society again, and we had such a good response the last time we wanted to get him back and talk about some movies. How you doing today, Nikolai?
Doing great. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. So what's going on with the Film Society?
Got a really great month. This Saturday we're doing a documentary called Beauty is Embarrassing. It's about a popular American artist who nobody knows by name. His name's Wayne White. But you'd know him from Smashing Pumpkins' video Tonight Tonight or Peter Gabriel's Big Time. He did all the puppets and most of the sets and the graphic design for Pee-wee's Playhouse. So he's really cool modern artist, and so we're really looking forward to that show.
That's good. I have seen that movie, and it's remarkable.
And then on Sunday will be our PBS Community Cinema show. That's a 4 o'clock Sunday show we do once a month as a partnership with them. It's called Half the Sky. And it's about a women's empowerment movement in the third world. It was actually started with a book, and then the book became this giant PBS series that's going to air over the course of the next month or two. It's like 3 or 4 hours long, but they've trimmed that down and created a feature film version that we'll show. And then we'll have, I believe, the Charleston Women's Society is going to come out and lead a discussion. The community cinema series always has the coolest speakers. We've had Olympic weightlifters. We've had deaf poets. We had the chief of the Edisto tribe, so it's always a good time, and that's a free show.
Is this done in association with a national?
They have a program called Community Cinema, and they run it in different cities all around the U.S., so there are actually a couple of ladies who used to run this at the library, and I guess attendance wasn't doing so hot there, and so they moved with us, and we partnered together, and so they take care of the PBS kind of relationship side, and the series runs from September through May. Once a month.
When you have speakers come in, are the former library folks bringing in those people, or do you go out and look for them?
Sometimes we'll help out, but usually we let them take the lead on it because they've got all these great relationships. They've been doing it for years, so they've got a lot of contacts in a lot of different spaces, and so they probably do 90% of the speakers. We'll help them out with one or two, but they take care of all the others.
How's turnout for that usually?
It ranges. A slow night, or a day, I guess, because it's a 4 p.m. show. Would probably be about a dozen people. A decent turnout's going to be 30s, whereas a Saturday night film, a low night's going to be 20s, and average will be around 35 to 40. A good night will be 70 or 80.
Okay. How's the draw been recently, and what movies have stood out that you have shown?
August in general was a little slow. Marley was our bigger one. That did play at the Terrace a month or two ago, but we went ahead and picked it up for another run and had a decent size. I think we had about 50 people at that show. And then we do the community cinema this weekend. We're actually doing Low Country Indie Shorts, which is our previously semi-annual shorts fest. Now we're going to annual so that we can make sure we're getting the best content. We've got two or three shorts confirmed who played at South by Southwest this year. We're working really hard to try to get The Chair, which was the winner at the Short Film Jury Prize at Cannes this year, and it was made in South Carolina. That's not confirmed yet, so this year we're also going from a 1 day to a 2 day fest, and we're moving it to the Terrace Theater to give it enough room for the folks who are coming. A lot of times that fest, people will be lining the walls, a lot of standing room. So.
Right. Scott, you've got to be excited about going into the Terrace, which is a well-known movie theater here in Charleston.
Yeah, the Terrace is awesome. I mean, their owner's on our board, and he's been a great help in helping us book shows for certain films we might not have been able to get otherwise, just because he's been in the industry so long, he knows all these folks.
How was the Marley film?
I did not attend the Marley film. I actually took a night off. Nowadays, we're running about 6 shows a month, 4 Saturdays, a first Wednesday anime, and a Sunday PBS show. And I usually will work about 2 of those. I might attend 1 or 2 others. But it's just hard to get out every week when I'm also running all of the back end stuff.
That's amazing that you guys are doing that many shows now. And, you do so much for the Film Society, that it is understandable that it's hard to make every event that could possibly go on. But I'm sure you're going to be at the Indie Shorts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I want to be there, right there with the audience and get the reactions and, see it all kind of come to fruition.
Right.
So we've been working on that since July. So.
Yeah, when you put a call out for that and you get all the submissions, I think we talked about it in the first podcast, that your group literally goes through every film and decides whether it can go in. I have a couple of questions about that. Do you ever get filmmakers or studios or groups that really lobby more than other folks to get that film in?
At our current size, if we're getting that kind of lobbying, we do every once in a while, and it it tends to be from a movie whose production values or whose writing isn't so hot. So they're selling it really hard.
Okay.
But the ones that are great, they kind of sell themselves, and we'll just snap them right up and put them in the programming.
Okay. Do you have any locals in that?
We do. We've got David Smith's latest, which was his SCAD thesis film.
Mm-hmm.
He's done Peculiar Kind of Sickness. Mm-hmm. He's been involved kind of in the whole local filmmaker scene. We're still kind of in the preliminaries, but I know I got two folks I've never heard of previously out of Goose Creek and Isle of Palms.
Really?
So some more folks are hearing about it, which is great. And then for the ones that were the South by Southwest films, I go out and check the fest, and I contact those filmmakers to say, hey, why don't you submit? It's free.
Your group and other art houses are a viable alternative for filmmakers and the rank-and-file film watchers, you know, the folks that are going and seeing the Batmans and Tyler Perry's latest movie, things like that. I mean, sometimes it's got to be a hard sell.
It can be. It's really, we have to find a strike a balance. Basically, mm-hmm. you've got to get them in there once or twice with something a little lighter. You're not going to give them serious art film.
Right.
So you have to intersperse some lighter stuff. And then once you've kind of got them there and they start liking the experience, they realize that, you know, they come to these movies and they'll remember them. It's not something they're going to, you know, pay $10, show up, eat some popcorn, and forget about it the next morning.
Right.
They start to have more conversations with their friends about these shows, and then they start coming more regularly. You still kind of bring them in, for the most part, with English language films. Subtitled films
sure.
can be a really tough sell unless you've been into indie film for a while. If you're mm-hmm. a first-timer, then a subtitled film can be a turnoff because you have to work a little more for it. There's always a great payoff, but it does require a little more upfront concentration on it.
Agreed. I think people, especially newbies or folks that aren't used to that or used to foreign film at all, it really is a job sometimes watching those films. Do you ever have shows that are 2-3 hours long? You try to keep them short and sweet.
Our longest show ever was probably close to 3 hours, and that was a classic film. It mm-hmm. was Cairo Station.
Okay.
But generally, most of our films are around an hour and a half. The one, Marley, for example, was 2.5 hours, and that's kind of on the longer end of what
right.
we do. We try to keep it between an hour and a half and 2 hours as long as, but, you know, if the movie's good, the movie's good and we're going to play it, you know.
Right. So you are, that's normal running time usually. So you're not just, you know, going 3 15-minute films and getting the people in and out. So you are giving them a value. Who else is working with you these days? You said you're working with the Terrace and they're on the board. Are there any other Charleston names that are pretty active?
We got a show coming up in October with mm-hmm. the Low Country High Rollers.
All right.
Who were in here recently.
Yeah, they're friends of the Chat Talk.
Yep, there was a Kickstarter or Indiegogo, one of those two kind mm-hmm. of crowdfunding campaigns for a film called Derby Baby about just the explosion of roller derby
right.
around the world, not just the U.S. And so we're kind of going in together on that, and they've secured the rights for the movie. And, you know, we're bringing kind of the venue and the operations and the advertising side, and we're going to kind of do a co-fundraiser of sorts with it. So.
Okay. When is that show?
That'll be October 20th.
Okay, so that's right around the corner. The Low Country High Rollers are pretty renowned on mm-hmm. good, I guess, marketing and hype of their organization. So I'm sure they'll come out in force for that.
Absolutely. We've had some folks who started talking to us about sponsorships. That's mm-hmm. still early stages, so I don't want to throw a name out
yet.
But a couple of Park Circle businesses and a couple folks out in West Ashley.
Okay, well, that's great that you're actually getting approached for sponsorships. You know, I mean, that must be few and far between. Do you have associates that run other film societies or other movie houses?
Not locally, but mm-hmm. we do have, you know, we're close friends with the Columbia Film Society, the Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. a friend at who runs the Tallahassee Film Society down in Florida.
Okay.
He found us randomly while he was down here on vacation, came to a show, and we've been in touch ever since. And recently, the Strand Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is, I believe, Hilton Head's where they're at right now.
Okay.
They kind of had an easy time of it because there's a full-time theater there, like traditional actors kind of
right.
theater. But what they've done is added them into the mix, so they've got a film society that plays on the weekends there, and so they've got a preset venue,
okay.
Which has been really awesome for them. And so I've kind of given them advice when I can on, you know, our pitfalls. They just started
right.
this year. I think February was their first show ever.
Do you think it's important to network like that? I mean, it reminds me of the old indie bands that were so entwined with each other and for touring and for venues.
Definitely. I mean, it's huge because you notice that one of these other film societies gets a movie that you'd never heard of, but you know your people would love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great because you can just call them up and say, hey, who was your contact on that? And,
oh, that's good.
You know, if you don't mind if I ask, how much did you pay for it?
Mm-hmm. I guess some people would think that a smaller organization like yours is not tasked with having to pay for the films. You know, for years I thought that basically these art houses and film societies and other small run theaters possibly did get all their stuff comped, but it really is a business and y'all have to think about that.
It is. When you get in kind of that arts and cultural space, mm-hmm. you really have to have earned income in addition to donations,
right,
in order to just to keep going, you know, because you're not doing a one-off event, you're doing it steady. And, you know, the film industry, while it is, you know, it's an artistic endeavor, but it's mm-hmm. also an industry. Those folks spend tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to make their movie, and they've got to make their money back and make their own living too.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's, we'll get stuff comped if it's a really small movie or someone's mm-hmm. trying to make a marketing push and get some press for themselves, and if we like the movie. But for the most part, we do pay rental fees for everything we show, just like a commercial theater would.
Okay, I think that's good for people to know as well, that it's not basically your gift to the neighborhood. If you have people that are bringing in their movies or sending you their movies, and they're probably falling over each other to do that, then if you have to go through all of these, perhaps it's better to pay for the good stuff instead of just putting a bunch of, you know, mediocre things up there just because it's maybe a little more easier on your bottom line.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll definitely pay for a movie that's high quality over taking mm-hmm. a free movie that's not going to interest anyone, you know?
Right. Have you ever had a movie that is super notable that has come across your table that maybe some regular movie fans would have heard of or possibly has played in other theaters before?
Our big one this year was Being Elmo.
Okay.
In terms of just huge turnout, really
right.
big name film that no one else in town was showing.
Mm-hmm.
I had mentioned Marley, which the Terrace mm-hmm. played. Queen of Versailles is one that's coming up, which
okay.
I think is either playing right now or playing soon at the Terrace. So that's a bigger name one. Did Shut Up and Play the Hits, mm-hmm. which was the LCD sound system. I think it may have played in town one night. So we went ahead and gave it a second night.
I hate that I missed that, by the way. I really hate. I know my wife hated she missed that too.
Right. Labor Day weekend may not have been the best choice for us to show it.
The movie got a lot of pub too, you know, all across the country, especially with alternative press.
Yeah, a lot of our stuff is nationally released. Mm-hmm. It's just, you won't always see it at a Regal or, you know, a Bijou, if that's still a thing.
Right.
I don't even know if Bijou is still in business.
The local paper, the Charleston City Paper, is the authority on pretty much everything that's kind of cool in Charleston. And they've been like that for, what, 10, 12 years. And I guess they recently had an article about 15 movers and shakers in the city. Are you familiar with that article?
I am. It was kind of a surprise. It was called The Freshman 15.
Right.
It came out in last Wednesday's issue. And it was pretty cool because I had, you know, I've got a good relationship with City Paper.
Mm-hmm.
They review a lot of our movies, and one day we just sat down and started talking, and then it turned out this issue came out and they stuck me on that list, and it was, you know, a little humbling, but it was very
right.
I was very happy to see it. I was very pleased that, you know, folks know what's going on out there, and that I'm doing it for the Film Society, not to get famous, obviously, but it was kind of cool to get recognized.
It's got to be great. And you didn't have any idea that you were going to be in the article?
I knew there was a 15th anniversary mm-hmm. issue coming up, and she was talking about 15 or people from 15 years ago, where are they now, and 15 people who were a flash in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then she talked about 15 recent folks, but I didn't really think that I was on that, because we were more just talking about movies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's very cool.
So it was cool.
Do you ever get someone that really wants to take you to task on the greatest movies of all time? I know you must get questions like that all the time.
Yeah, I like to play a little game with folks when mm-hmm. I meet them, ask them what are their favorite five of the moment.
Really?
Just, you know, that way, if you just say, what's your favorite five films, anybody who really likes movies, they're like, wait, five films of what kind?
Right.
You know, so I just say your top five right now that you've seen recently.
It always seems like people also go for the low-hanging fruit, and they want to sound cool at the party and go with the Citizen Kane and Apocalypse Now, and,
right?
You know, things like that. Someone will ask me, and you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High is in my top five, just because it impacted me when I was a young high schooler when it first came out. So it must be hard to pull that out of somebody.
Yeah, some people just kind of stop and wait. Let me think. But it works as a fun little icebreaker, and not too many people just try to be impressive with it when you're just one-on-one conversation, which is nice.
I would think that it's kind of imposing, though, that you're such a film person. Personally, if you asked me, I'd possibly go to that locker and try to pull out the five cool films. You know, the one that was always in my pocket was the original Manchurian Candidate, you know.
Absolutely.
Even though it is one of my top five movies, it always sounded impressive when you said it. Speaking of top movies, AFI put out the 100 Greatest Movies a few years ago, and then they updated it in 2007, I believe. Do you ever go through a list like that and start rearranging it, or say, you know, maybe the top 10 is not exactly what I would have chosen?
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes with those, there's a lot of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So that top 10 will occasionally be filled with stuff that's from the 30s and 40s.
Okay, if the top 10 has, let's just go through the 100 really quickly. We're looking at Citizen Kane, Godfather, Casablanca, Raging Bull, and Singing in the Rain. Do you think those are just the sexy picks or the nostalgic?
Absolutely. I mean, you'll notice that all of those are pretty old films.
Terribly old.
Some are, you know, I'm totally with that. Like Casablanca is one of my all-time favorites.
Right.
Just it's got so much style. And I love noir, you know. I put that up there with like The Maltese Falcon and The Big Sleep, Double Indemnity. I love a good mystery, a good noir story. But yeah, it's, you know, there has been good stuff since then. It's okay to revamp or rearrange the list a little bit. And I feel like part of that is some of the requirements to get on that list are that you do have to have won like major awards at film festivals or Oscars or things like that.
Okay.
It has to be an American film in terms of its input.
Mm-hmm.
So either an American director or filmed in America, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that does keep the list a little bit more limited. You know, you're leaving out the rest of the world, but it is the American Film Institute. So
that's right.
They're totally right to do that.
Right. So it seems like they should actually put a little criteria in that. And I think all good lists should at least have some kind of criteria or measuring stick. Top of your head, anything in the past 6 years that you think would make a top 20 or a top 25?
I had mentioned the noir, and a few years ago there was a film called Brick with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and it just blew my mind. It managed to update the setting, but it kept a very traditional plot. And they moved it back to a high school kind of thing.
Really?
But the entire dialogue, they had the made-up slang that you would see. They spoke really fast, like they did in the 40s in the old films. You know,
right.
It was just like back-and-forth banter constantly. And it was wonderful, and I feel like not enough people saw it. You know, it got some play, but I don't know if it ever hit the big theaters.
That must be terribly difficult to take a genre light noir and serve it up in the 2000s. Plus, the fact that some people don't have that frame of reference with the old movies, you know, the Maltese Falcon and whatnot. Actually, it is kind of postmodern. You could serve up a lot of this stuff to new viewers, whether it's an homage or a straight ripoff, and they may not be the wiser.
Absolutely. I mean, people, if you don't know any of the old films, then everything's fresh.
Right. And you know, it also were in the
Big Lebowski was actually The Big Sleep.
Was it?
Same film.
Okay, I had no idea. I never even thought about that.
It was kind of the Coen brothers' reimagining of The Big Sleep.
I'll be darned. Okay, now I'm going to look at it so much differently. You know, and I've already seen Lebowski, you know, 20 times like everyone else has. Well, that's remarkable. I wonder if a lot of the kids or, you know, the adults that are making films now are coming up and they are educating themselves on the film. Or, you know, you have a lot of guerrilla filmmakers now that are just putting together their stuff. Do you think it's important that people that are making films right now know the history and know the craft?
Knowing the history is useful. Knowing the craft is essential. You know, like if you have the best written film in the world, but your lighting's so bad you can't see your characters, or you know what I mean, or your framing's just really boring. You know, like a lot of new directors will just put a camera in the corner and have people stand in front of it and talk. And, you know, you might as well be, like, at a play somewhere, but, like, you know, community theater play.
Right. It does seem like a play sometimes. And a lot of the films can get terribly wordy, and mm-hmm. that's definitely straight off of playwriting. You know, it's, right. it's dialogue, dialogue, dialogue.
Yeah, like, film is it's an inherently visual medium. Mm-hmm. Like, play with it. Have fun with it. I don't know if you got a chance to see Moonrise Kingdom. Wes Anderson's
not
nice
yet.
One.
My kid and my wife went to see it, and I really want to see that.
And, like, I think that was the movie Wes Anderson's been trying to make since he started. And he, you know, like, I love all of his stuff, but this mm-hmm. just felt so essentially like his aesthetic that he creates every time with these, yep. you know, these pastels and these tracking shots where, you know, you start within the frame and you're moving sideways. Or right. when he's kind of going up and down and all around this house with the camera in one place. At the intro, and just, you know, he brings you into his worlds really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the dialogue or even the acting doing that. You know, the acting brings you into the character, but it's the camera that brings you into the rest of that world.
It's interesting he chose some of the actors that he had, and frankly some of the actors that, you know, he would previously have, you know, the Hackmans and the Bruce Willis, and get them to buy into his work. As far as filmmaking goes, Trident Tech is a local college mm-hmm. here in Charleston. And their film department puts a lot of folks out. Do you ever deal with any of those people? Do you ever entertain any of the filmmakers at the Film Society?
Every once in a while, their focus there is more around commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So they do a lot of prepping for TV news and for commercial work okay. versus narrative or fictional kind of film.
Okay.
So not as much as actually coming out of Trident in terms of, you know, that kind of thing. It's more prepping to do production for, you know, for local or national news.
Are there any notable film schools in the Carolinas?
In the Carolinas? Yeah, North Carolina.
That's right, the North Carolina
they've got
School of the Arts.
Exactly. Yeah, they put out really great stuff. And, you know, just down below us, we've got SCAD, which mm-hmm. has wonderful filmmakers. I mean, I think they're on par with any kind of, you know, New York or LA film school.
Have you ever worked with any of SCAD folks? Or you ever thought of doing a complete show of all SCAD folks?
When I worked on the last Charleston Film Festival, mm-hmm. we had a lot of SCAD partnership going on. So we played a lot of their students' thesis films or some of the senior students' films that they were doing. So we've got some contact going there. We haven't had a full-on SCAD night at the theater.
Right.
I'd love to. I guess we just haven't really pondered doing that in the past.
The Charleston International Film Festival, that started a few years ago. Is that the only film festival in town still?
The international one is the one that plays downtown.
Mm-hmm.
The Charleston Film Festival, if you could do the full name, I think it's the Charleston Film Festival at the Terrace.
Okay, good.
That's the one that we were involved in last year. We programmed all of the local content, which is why we got that SCAD partnership.
Okay.
And the Charleston Arts Institute, we got some films from them as well. They're kind of getting into film.
Okay, yeah, and I guess the first international film festival is at the Terrace. That's why I get confused sometimes mm-hmm. as to how they did that. It must be quite an undertaking to try to put a film festival together, no matter what size it is.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to figure out timing on so many things mm-hmm. because you have to have a nice long period for submissions, but it can't be too close to the event.
Right.
Otherwise, you can't advertise the titles.
Mm-hmm.
So with something like the Lowcountry Indie Shorts, you know, we're cutting it a little close. We've only got about a week and a half between end of submissions and the actual showing of the titles.
Holy
cow. So we're trying to get people excited just about the event and knowing that there's really high quality stuff coming that you're not going to see possibly ever, but definitely not in town. Just, you know, short film, unless you buy compilations of short film, you don't have a good public venue to see it very often.
Right. So you probably don't have a whole lot of time to be wasting at a podcast right now to get this stuff together. Do you have a lot of the filmmakers or actors or anybody involved with the film that ever wants to show up and present these films? Didn't you recently do a documentary on the GLOW wrestlers?
Yeah, we didn't have any wrestlers show up for that.
Okay, that's what I wanted.
Sorry.
Okay, I was trying to veil my true question, if any of the wrestlers showed up.
We did have a guy who was doing a U.S. college tour with his film called My America,
mm-hmm.
and he was on his passing through Charleston, didn't have a college he was going to play at here, but he just called me up. And
we
sorted that out, and it turns out, you know, like, we let him crash at our place for the night since it was just an overnight thing. His movie was really cool, but we actually discovered, you know, just talking later that night, he was the grandson of the Hungarian prime minister under communist Hungary. I was like, wow,
that must
you get some cool people coming through Charleston.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Oh my gosh, he must have had a million stories to tell. Of course, people are probably always telling him, hey, why don't you make a movie about the Hungarian prime minister under communist rule? During the holidays, do you ever do any holiday-themed stuff? Do you do any Halloween, Christmas?
Our first couple of years, we started with a Christmas show or a Christmas festival show. It was during the North Charleston Holiday Fest. So that was our very first show in 08. But we've traditionally done a free show in December that's got a holiday theme. We'll try to do a two different films, one more family friendly and one more, you know, for adults only. But lately attendance, like, I guess when you get that close to Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, pick your holiday of choice.
Sure.
When you start getting close, attendance wanes. So we've actually started cutting sort of at the weekend before Thanksgiving. So between Thanksgiving and Christmas, attendance, you know, the folks are so busy with other stuff that they're not taking a break to watch a movie, and we're not going to get those movies free. So we kind of, it's partially a financial decision there. You know, we'd love to show all year, but we do take that month off. For Halloween, we're showing a little indie called The Selling, which is, it's during the housing crisis, of course.
Really?
But a guy tries to flip this house that he discovers is haunted. And, you know, it's obviously a bit of a tough sell.
That sounds clever.
Yeah, so you can check out the preview on the website, but that's one of those ones that we get in that are just, it's very DIY, but the production values are good and the writing's good. And, you know, they're kind of those type of folks who, they want people to see their movie as opposed to they're trying to get rich.
Well, I think, you know, something like Halloween, you could probably get away with campy or kitschy or maybe lower quality, because God knows some of the best, you know, horror is kind of low quality.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, as long as you're doing something unique, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I don't think anybody's going to say anything about Evil Dead 2 if you ever get to show that. And if you do, let me know.
Right.
Okay, so wrapping up, I guess we've touched upon everything that's coming up. And I know that the year's not quite out, but do you think you're going to ramp anything up next year? Or are you going to try to just stay the course?
I think for now, we're putting on, by the end of this year, we'll have put on, we're going to hit 75 films.
Remarkable.
Which is when you consider that we're not showing every night of the week and that we're still all volunteer and everybody has a day job. That's
sure.
It's a pretty big undertaking. So I think we're going to probably just stay organic. You know, it has been growing. Last year, I think we had about 1,100 people through the door all year. And this year, right now, we're sitting at 1,900. So I think we may get close to double attendance.
Wow.
So I mean, we're going to roll with it and find ways to keep it financially stable and creatively fun.
Well, it's quite an achievement. And of course, don't let that movers and shakers of City Paper thing go to your head, because you are you're turning into quite the North Charleston treasure, and your film society is as well. Anything you want to wrap up? You want to give some websites and other contact information?
Sure. You can reach us at parkcirclefilms.org. That's got the latest schedule, information on becoming a member or volunteering. First Wednesday of every month when we have our free anime show, that same night at 6:30, we do a volunteer training. So if you've ever wanted to help run a Saturday night, make some popcorn and watch a movie for free, you can join us then. Facebook, definitely check us out there. Okay. Facebook.com/parkcirclefilms.
Okay.
Which has been growing. We're sitting at about 820 or so fans, which is decent.
That's great.
You know? And you can reach us via email at connect@parkcirclefilms.org.
Okay. So. Great. Well, we appreciate you coming in again and hope to see you soon. And maybe around Halloween time, we can talk about scary movies.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, y'all. We'll see y'all next week.